time we're talking about Hispanic culture, some aspects of Hispanic culture and the faith. So that's what we're going to try and deal with a little bit today. I don't know, you haven't had much contact with Hispanic. What does Hispanic include?
All Spanish speaking.
It includes everybody that comes from Puerto Rico, from Mexico all the way south. Okay. Except in Brazil, because they speak Portuguese. That's true in some places around here too. Yeah. They figure that there might be some 30 million or 35 million Hispanics in the United States by the turn of the century, which is a pretty high number. Well, we've been looking at some of their culture, and one of the things that's important to know about Hispanics, if you're going to deal with them, is that the Roman Catholicism really suffuses the whole culture. It kind of plays into just about everything that they say or do or think, because they grow up within that part of the culture. It's been so tied in with government and with life and the thinking of the people that it's pretty hard for them to escape from that. And I'm sure that most of them, even though they don't know very much of the Roman Catholic Church because there's so few priests and so on, I think most of them don't realize that what an influence the Roman Catholic Church and you might say Roman Catholic culture has on their own. So in some ways, even though it looks like it might be very easy to bring those people into the Lutheran Church, and that's generally what we've been trying to do in the past, it's not always all that easy.
Marlon.
A lot of them don't want to convert to Protestantism, because they see it as kind of a heretical thing. You know, they've been taught that down the line. And as in addition to that, since it is such a great part of their culture to be Roman Catholic, they see themselves as traitors to their church, to their people, even to their culture. And so in some ways they have to overcome some of those concepts. In addition, there's, because of the shortage of priests throughout Latin America, and how the people have been scattered and spread a lot, there's a lot of folk Catholicism that has evolved in the rural areas. And I think that puts another kind of an obstacle in our way as we try to reach out to Hispanics, particularly if you're thinking in terms of establishing Lutheran congregations. I take it you're Lutheran. Yeah. If you came from Minnesota, you got to be Lutheran. Because in the rural areas, particularly where this has grown up, it came to be that family worship was the more important thing. It's the foundation of their whole religious life, because the priest only comes so and so often, you know, maybe once a year to do baptisms and marriages and a few things like that. Most of the villages would have a chapel that they have, which the priest uses when he comes, or people used to go in and pray in also. But actually, it's family worship is the most important. In most of the countries and most of the homes in the rural areas, at least, they have a little corner of kind of an alcove for worship, and they have the patron saint of the particular place or area there. Perhaps the patron saint of the nation in Mexico, very much it's the Virgin of Guadalupe. But every country kind of has its Virgin, a different form of the Virgin Mary that they worship. They'll have candles there, flowers. They do their prayers there in the morning and the evening, and they make vows also and to these to these saints that they have. They may have a crucifix also, and almost invariably a picture of the Virgin. And they'll have that also in the bedroom, in their bedroom, very often. Not the whole alcove, usually, but at least a crucifix or a picture in the bedroom. Usually because each nation has its own Virgin. Yeah. There's a big movement in the United States among Roman Catholics that deal with Hispanics, particularly to introduce in the Virgin of Guadalupe from Mexico, because they say she's the mother of the Americas, so all the way down. In some places, I guess it's catching on, even among Catholics over in Europe and so on. But you heard of the Virgin of Fatima, that's from Portugal, and the Virgin of Lourdes, and Our Lady of Lourdes in France, and so on. So that's the way it goes. As it turns out that way, then, the saints have become, for those people, this is kind of traditional, there's some change in that going on now, but traditionally, the saints have become the objects of worship, because they are the people that stand in between the worshiper and God, Jesus Christ, but primarily the best of all, the one who intercedes most of all, is Mary, of course, because since she is the mother of God and the mother of Jesus, those two terms are very important. That means that she has the most influence over Jesus, more than any of the others. And then Jesus is the one that has influence to the Father. So it's kind of a step-by-step thing, you know, in your prayers. You pray to the saints, and maybe the saint will go to Mary, and then Mary to Jesus, and Jesus to the Father. Or else you bypass the saints and you go to Mary directly. And that's because Mary has become, for the people, a symbol, the symbol of love, concern, care, and the whole humanity thing. Because of the whole family life, the father is not seen as the one who really cares for the family. He doesn't show affection nearly as much. But the mother is the one that stands between the father and the child also. So she is the real glue that holds the family together. My personal opinion is I doubt it very much that would change, because... hi. This is a Hispanic. Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Sit down. Glad to have you. As you see, we're kind of few here today, but... We were just talking about Roman Catholicism and how folk Catholicism has traditionally arisen in Latin America, and the whole worship of Mary, Mariology, is very strong. We just touched on a couple of points, and she brought up the whole idea of inclusive language that's so important for a lot of people in the United States nowadays. Whether or not that would take over, and I my personal opinion would be it won't. It won't, because you have, on the one hand, in the folk religion, at least, you have a Holy Trinity, but it's Father, Son, and Mary. Okay, so Mary is the mother of God, and it's going to be a long time, I think, before they identify God as a female, because they already have that female figure up there. And besides, in the language, I was thinking about that the other day while we were talking about, or in one of the sessions, it would be very, very difficult in Spanish to use inclusive language the way we do it in English. Because not many of the forms of the pronouns, and also of the adverbs and so on, have feminine, masculine, and feminine form, and there's no other alternate form. So, that's just two reasons why I don't think it's really going to take over. it would kind of have to redo the whole grammar, I think, in some ways. Okay, in addition, of course, in this full Catholicism, you have the use of the rosary, which is very common, and the simple family worship that has replaced the Mass, because the priests aren't there to do the Mass. And even in some of the larger cities, the people find that worship is more individual. They'll go to church and pray for themselves. They don't go to Mass unless they feel like they... Yeah, the Roman Catholicism of Latin America derives from the Southern Europe, European tradition, Spain and Italy and across like that. And that's quite different than the Roman Catholicism that derives from Northern Europe, which was transplanted here. But the worst part, I guess, is the whole thing about... Hi. That's all right. The worst part of it is that there's not... the church is not really taking care of its people in the Roman Catholic Church, and can't take care of its people because of the lack of priesthood and so forth. Now, that's kind of what the traditional thing is, family worship, okay? Individualism in worship. There's not the sense of community. And besides, because the church is so remote for most of the people that live in the rural areas, they don't see the church as their church in the same sense that we do. It's not something that they are responsible for, or that they have any vital, real vital connection with. In fact, here, I just was reading here the other day, kind of interesting. By being so thoroughly, this chapter is dealing with idealism and realism. They're two different things, but they're both side by side in Hispanic culture. By being so thoroughly idealistic, the church has not, however, escaped from this world or from the realistic demands of life upon it. By asking no question, religion also expects no answers, and this means no involvement from the layman. Why should he bother his head about religious issues? Traditionally, one was better off not to read the Bible, for reading it might involve one in serious theological difficulties. Therefore, theological illiteracy was considered preferable to theological danger. That kind of mindset. So the people really are not close to the priests, and the priests also traditionally don't visit the people in their homes. It's very much programmatic, you know, and very much centered around the Mass and the other six sacraments. And that's the contact that the priest has with the people, for the most part, in Latin America. So when Protestants come and start planting churches, that's one of the big differences, that people like it that Protestant pastors or missionaries go from home to home and go visit and talk to the people and kind of more or less live down on their level. But a lot of changes have taken place since the Second Vatican Council, which opened the door for a lot of new things happening, and particularly in 1968 at the conference in Medellin, Colombia, of the Roman Catholic bishops of Latin America. They took on some very heavy stuff, and it really changed the whole outlook of the church, so that in fact the church today is kind of divided. And I think that's most evident if you've been reading anything about that in Nicaragua, because the hierarchy is still very traditional in holding to the way things were. But the new priests that come in, and many of them are from the United States, have taken what they call the option for the poor. And that grew out of the Medellin documents and that discussion that had taken place. So that the church no longer is favoring the rich and siding with the powerful because they were rich, government and the rich people. But now a good share of the church is siding with the poor. And I've heard a lot of that around here the last week and a half, and you probably will hear more of that, how that has taken shape in Latin America, wherever you hear anything about Latin America. Strange things happened then. Some of the priests came in and they would take the saints down from the churches. You don't see saints all over the churches like you used to years ago in Latin America. I remember one priest was telling me that, I think it was Mary Noel Fathers, had gone to a certain area, a rural area in Honduras, and they were doing an excellent job. They were training the people, training catechists and all of that. They dressed like I do with these white shirts. They're called Guayabera shirts. And they had a little cross on their thing, and that's all. That's the only way you could tell that they were priests. Otherwise, they dressed like the people. They visited in their homes and did all the kinds of things that Protestant missionaries do. And everything was all right until they got to the point where they took the saints out of the church. And then the people rose up in arms and they said, "You were just disguised Protestant missionaries. You're not really Roman Catholic priests." And a lot of the things that they had been doing just kind of fell back for us, set them back a long ways because of that. That's the attachment that the people have in the rural areas to the priests. And that was not too many years ago. That was, well, I guess it'd be about 15 years ago or 20 years ago now. Forgotten how long we've been up here. Yes? Well, okay. You mean taking the saints out?
Yes.
Those two are not necessarily in themselves connected. Okay, that was one of the other things that came out of Medellin. Okay, that the church needed to re-evangelize its own people. One of the Franciscan priests in Honduras that I had quite a bit of contact with, he asked me one day, what are you doing down here anyway? You know, what kind of work are you doing? So I explained it to him, and he said, "Well, that sounds just like what we're doing. We tell the people here, just because you're Catholic doesn't mean you're Christian." He said, "Our task really is to re-evangelize our own people." And I thought that was kind of interesting. But all of that kind of thinking has come out of Medellin. And that to me is a cause for rejoicing. Another thing that came out of that in the Roman Catholic Church was an emphasis on reading the scriptures. I didn't bring it along. I have a Spanish Bible here that was printed by the American Bible Society. But it was translated and printed by them, but also the Roman Catholic Church liked it, and they entered into agreement with the American Bible Society, and they printed an edition with the deuterocanonical books, you know, the ones in between, like the books of Maccabees and so forth, in that Bible. And it sold all over Latin America. So a lot of people are reading the Bible now, and they're coming to many of the same conclusions that Martin Luther did, you know, when he got into reading the Bible. They're seeing that a lot of things that were wrong or that were not biblical were the kind of things that they don't want to do anymore, because this is what the scripture says. And I think that's all to the good. It's quite a... There are also some Catholic, Roman Catholic editions of the Bible that come out of Spain, a new translation. excellent translation. The Bible, the Jerusalem Bible, was translated into Spanish too, and there are a couple of other editions now that are being used. So they're getting kind of like the Protestants in that we have a lot of versions. They have a number of versions where 30 years ago they didn't even own a Bible, didn't even know what one looked like, unless they bought one from a Protestant missionary. So that's a great thing. Also, that was brought in the vernacular language in the worship. Okay, not doing it in Latin, but doing the Mass in Spanish, and the people responding, the people singing hymns, which they never did before. So there's been a lot of changes like that, that's been for the good. Although a lot of it has kind of stayed so far in the bigger cities and towns, and not all of it has filtered down to the rural people. For instance, people that we're working with, largely they're undocumented workers from Mexico, mostly come from the state of Michoacán in Mexico. It's an agricultural state. And those people, they're pretty much the old traditional Roman Catholic, most of them. So they have all of these new things haven't always filtered down to them. So that puts some kind of obstacles in our way as we're trying to plant churches. Did you want to say something? Okay. Now, I suppose that you all would agree with the proposition that your culture influences your faith. Faith influences your culture, right? I think when we read the scriptures, and the new awakening to the scriptures is great, but when you read the scriptures, you read it with your own cultural understanding. If any of you have heard Pete Parrell here telling Bible stories or something like that, or summarizing Bible stories, in his own way of speaking, the way the black community speaks and thinks, you see what a revelation that is. I don't know if you've heard any of that, but to me it's a really a neat way of doing it, and the Hispanics do that too. I was reading in a commentary from England, I think it's one of the Tyndale commentaries on the children at the temple who were singing Hosanna when Jesus, on the day that Jesus entered triumphantly into Jerusalem, and he had the remark in there that here these children were shouting Hosanna and all kinds of other things and praising God and crowding around Jesus in the temple, he said. And he said something about the irreverence of the children was not really fitting. Well, maybe for a Briton or maybe for a North American, that would be considered irreverence. But it sure wouldn't be in the Hispanic culture. Because if you come to one of our services sometime, you might go out of your mind, go bonkers because of all the noise, the kids getting up and down and walking around and talking and playing, and the parents just sit there, they don't discipline them in that respect at all. I don't know if they expect us to do it or what, but it's a noisy kind of worship. Like some of the Vespers that we've been having over here. It's noisy and it's informal, and people feel much more free to take part.
The change in culture like that, we realized when our daughter and her husband came back in Guatemala, that the first time they attended church here, she immediately realized that her children were not sitting in, they attended the English service, where the children were
for
I think that's part of it, because in the Hispanic culture, in the Roman Catholic Church, you rarely have any sermons. At best, you have a short homily, which is mostly an exhortation to moral living, most of the time.
Yet I notice that often they listen to his sermons more carefully than I notice people were supposedly quiet, because our services are more informal and you often ask questions during sermons and things like that. And there's always somebody that can answer, and then, and even after all these years, I'm still surprised, because the children are
they'll be sitting there coloring or something like that, and I ask a question and for a yes or no answer, and they'll come up with the answer before the adults can hear. So you know they're listening. Sometimes I do it that way. People start turning around and looking, then you know.
Yeah. I guess some of that those looks are more distracting than the
children. Well, there's a couple of other examples that come to mind. We live on the Yakima Indian Reservation right now in Toppenish, and somebody was telling me that in the Indian culture, an Indian would say, when you talk about Christ being crucified, and he's the son of the Father, and the Father sent him to die, an Indian would respond, or a Native American would respond, "I'd never do that kind of thing to my son." And so that puts a block for him, that's a cultural block for him, to understand the love of God. To him, that's not loving, a loving action on the part of the Father, to give his son over to death like that. How do you bridge that kind of gap? Well, I'm not in Native American ministry, so I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet, but that would be a real difficult thing, I think. And the same happens in the Hispanic culture sometimes, because the father is so aloof in the family. He's the one that commands respect, and he doesn't show affection except to very small children, and he shows a lot of affection to them. But when they're, say, like 4 or 5 years old, then it's kind of, this is the way he lays down the law, and that's what they live by, and he just kind of moves out of their life, and it's the mother that takes over in the family. A lot of the fathers, because they're in common law marriage, it's very common not to have a church or a civil wedding. But it's, I think, also part of the culture that many of the fathers will have 3 or 4 children with a woman, and then just split and go off somewhere else and leave them, you know, abandon them. And for a lot of the kids, their image of the father is totally the opposite of what we mean when we say God, our loving Father. They don't know what a loving father really is. If you want them to know, you have to say a loving mother, and rather make that comparison, that God is like a loving mother rather than a father, because otherwise they won't understand and they won't accept it. So you need to understand the cultural setting, I guess, also in which you're working.
Well, that's very common in that culture,
I think, here, yeah.
Well,
very much. I don't know. I suspect that there are some other reasons in the black community. I don't think I'm competent to answer that, though. I've heard it said a couple of times here that black culture is more matriarchal which the...
It's racism, a lot of it is caused by lack of jobs. They have good jobs, so they have some jobs, work. And, year after year, you just get discouraged. If you have kids and families somewhere, you can't support them. You'd rather not be reminded of it.
Because of all of these things, I think it's really, really nice, really good if you can have some kind of contact with another culture or another language, learn another language. We're kind of lazy in the United States about that. We think the whole world should speak English, and Europeans, for instance, many of them will know three or four languages, you know, or more, be able to get along with them. But if you can read the scriptures in another language, and you can hear how people interpret and how they see things from their own cultural point of view. For instance, like here in the United States, the Cotton Patch version of the scriptures. I don't know if you've ever read any of that. It's in Georgia, isn't it? Yeah. It was translated in Georgia and uses the kind of language that the black people would use. And it's really, you know, it really has an impact that way. And you begin to see things that there's more to scriptures than just seeing it the way we would see it. And I think that helps open up the scriptures for us. Yeah, there's four volumes of it.
I haven't read it yet.
it's kind of a story of how the basic Christian communities began to arise. Kind of a history of that in Nicaragua, and it's how the people get together in these small groups and discuss and talk together. And that's very illuminating. There's also a tradition that's still viable in some of the rural areas, for instance, where the land that people work is worked in common. You don't own your own field, okay? You have this big plot of land, and everybody from the village works in there. And then they share the result of that. That's the way it was in the southwest of the United States when, before the North Americans took over. They had this whole system, and they couldn't, like the Indians, they couldn't understand, how can you say you own this property as an individual? Because it belongs to all of us. It's given to us by God, okay? And it's for all of us to use and take care of. And so I think that might even play into the concept of communism as a natural thing. Because they're used to that.
And there are still
the Indian culture is much that way here, too, the Native American.
Yeah, it's close to the American Indian.
They don't use a plow because that would be like scratching the face of your mother. To open the earth, Mother Earth, you know, use a plow like that. That's doing damage to your mother. Because she's the one that sustains us. So all of those kinds of things, I think, are helpful, huh? What's that? No.
No.
Well, another illustration of how sometimes it's difficult for us to get across, get the gospel across to people. Well, I don't think the gospel, I don't mean to say that, but to get across our concepts of what the church ought to be, what a congregation is. I said before yesterday that the Hispanics don't live to work like most North Americans. You know, it's kind of our work ethic. But they work to live. In other words, they work and earn money so that they can enjoy it. One illustration of that is a man would get a job and he'd work until he had a certain amount saved, whatever he decided he wanted, and then he'd quit his job and go out and live on that until it was gone and then go look for another job. And we can't understand that kind of thing. That sounds like the height of folly, you know. Tied into that, too, is the whole concept of living for today. That the past is something that's gone, it's a past reality, and the future is still something that you hope for, and they really don't have reality for you, but today is real, and today is when you're living, okay? So you don't worry about the future. We can see that in the people that we serve now. They work through the summer, and sometimes make good money. They might make up to $10,000-$15,000, you know, during the summer, yeah, a whole family working, or maybe even more, which they could live on all year. But by it comes around November, December, January, they're out of money, and they might have a big stereo, and they might have gotten a different car, and they might have gotten a lot of clothes and this kind of thing. And to that degree, they're buying into our culture. You know, they love the material thing. But it's also the idea that you don't have to worry about the future. The future somehow will take care of itself. You're living for today. Now, when you take that over into the church, you talk about congregational life. We talk about church work. Okay. I think that grows out of our concept that we are dedicated to work. You know, we live to work. But the Hispanic doesn't look upon the church as work. He looks upon it as celebration, as joy, as fiesta. Okay. It should take take that concept. So how do you involve a Hispanic in church work?
Church life.
Yeah, right. Something you have to enjoy, you know, make it enjoyable for them. And I haven't tried it myself, but it seems to me that would be neat to have, say, like a whole day, take a Sunday and say, this is going to be our worship. You have worship, and you have communion, and you have food, and you have fiesta, and you have piñatas, and you have the whole thing. And a whole day of it, you know. And work it all in as part of your worship, part of your church life. I don't know if that would work out, but that's one of the dreams that I have. Another thing that makes it very difficult for us is the closed the closed way that Hispanics have about their own ideas. We find it easy to share ideas and not so easy to share feelings. This is in general, okay? I'll have to accept you women from that, but especially the men, you know. We've been trained all our lives, in the past at least, not to show feelings, and maybe even to repress them. But the Hispanics are the opposite. They can easily show their feelings, but they're very reserved about showing their ideas, their way of thinking, and their thoughts. Part of the idea, part of the culture says, my ideas are just as good as yours. And because of this folk Catholicism, which has made religion a very private matter for a lot of people, or at least a family matter, that a lot of people that you contact, particularly the men, won't open up to you. And if you start telling them what they are supposed to believe, as we often do, you know, in our way of evangelizing, that you have to believe this and you have to believe that, you'll turn them off. Particularly if they don't know you very well, because they will say, how can I be sure that your interpretation of God is right? Because I don't know you, on the one hand. You need to prove that your ideas are acceptable through your personal interaction, not through argumentation and logic and propositional truth and so on, proving one thing after the other, because it's all relational. The whole life is relational. You're related to persons, and if they don't see you as a person that's trustworthy, they'll listen to what you have to say and be very polite about it, but it's like talking to the wall or the wind. As soon as you leave, your words and your thoughts have drifted out of their consciousness because they've been tuned it out. Yeah.
How can one tell when they're at that trust level during the moment? What would be the clues to know that they've been trusted?
I think one of the clues would be if they start sharing something out of their own life with you. Part of that trust level is also built up if you take a holistic approach to life. If you're not concerned about their social needs, their physical needs, their emotional needs, and if you're not interested in doing something for them, they will say, I don't really know if you're concerned about my spiritual needs either, because you don't show it in the whole aspect of life. They cannot compartmentalize religion. Like, this is Sunday, we have a religious day, and the rest of the week is different. No, they don't do that. Religion is part of their whole life. And everything else that they have is part of that life that they have. And if you're really concerned about them, then you're concerned about their whole life. And I think that's one of the reasons why they will do something that that we find, or I have found, or rather odd in the past, is they'll tell anybody, it seems like, everything about their life, the most intimate details about their life. You know, it's just everything is, can be told, but it'll be told to somebody in whom they already have a trust level, something built up. Because their view of life is more holistic in that sense. So, as you deal with Hispanics, you have to live the gospel as well as proclaim it with words. Otherwise, your proclamation is at best going to take a long, long time to get through. Well, it might do something. Yeah, it's not, I wouldn't say it's nothing, but you know, if that's all you're doing, I think that's... well, friendliness.
Just stop by. The more you stop by, the more they need you to care. You don't have to say a lot. You don't have to make it into a big deal.
You can invite them to, after a little while, invite them to supper to your home to talk. You know, have coffee and cookies or something like that. And just, if you really care, I mean, if that care is within you, as you've expressed, just be friendly. Do whatever you can to make friends with them. That's the way the trust level grows. And you'll see opportunities too, you know, maybe you can help them with something if they need clothing or something, or buy something for the children. That's one good way to reach their hearts, if you can do something for the children. We have doctrine classes like Saturday school for our children, and it always amazes me that somebody will say, our children go to these doctrine classes to a friend, and then they'll say to us, would you please stop by and pick up their children, because they want to go to doctrine class too. We go over there and pick up the children. I usually go first and talk to them, you know. And they immediately let us have their children. They don't know who we are, what we're teaching really, except that the kids like it, and the kids want to go, and they will let us take their children on the bus and take them across town and bring them back. You know, that's amazing.
They trust the person that told them. Mm-hmm. That those people trust us, and so then
they take recommendations
right.
Very seriously.
Because I trust them that if I say, well, my kids are going to trust us too. And I feel that as a really big responsibility. Because I don't think that I would have just let my children go to some church I didn't know much about. Even if you were my friend, you would have said your children are going to. I would have wanted to go and check myself. So that's where
another thing that you can do that I think is very important here in this country is get involved in some group that is advocacy group for Hispanics. And you will meet other Hispanics there, and it doesn't take long for the news to get around, you know, that this person is concerned and is willing to do something and is working, you know, to help us. I think that's another big plus.
Is there a division in the Hispanic community in this country between people who've been here for a while and gotten established and people who have just come?
Yeah, there's a lot of bad feeling between Mexicans and Mexican Americans. A lot of times the Mexican Americans feel like they are discriminated against when they go down to Mexico. And even though they talk Spanish, but they call them Tejanos, at least they did in Texas. They call them Tejanos, and you're not really Mexican. And then on the other side, you know, in Texas, they're not really American for a lot of people. So, you know, they're kind of in between. And there's also, with the undocumented people, we find that there's a lot of fear, even more so, I think, among the Hispanics that live here, that have permanent residence or were born here. A lot of fear that the undocumented are going to take away work from them. And there may be some truth to that. I don't think there's very much, but there may be some truth in the sense that the business people can get away with paying the undocumented less money than they can if they're native born here. They're citizens and they at least have to get minimum wage, and a lot of times they don't get minimum wage if they're undocumented.
Yeah.
Or they do it by piecework, and then, you know, the wages really go down that way sometimes. Excuse me.
In the area where we live, there's such a high population of Hispanic people, part undocumented, part people who have been residents for a long time. But many people, white people, police and so on, simply just look at them all and say, you know, you're Mexican, and have on occasion actually grabbed, as they say, you know, taken them and questioned them whether they're undocumented. And that is really painful for people who were born and have been brought up here, to be stopped by a policeman and say, let me see your human card. And so then there's a division there, because the residents feel some resentment that they are treated that way because of so many undocumented people. Now that would be more area-wise, like an area where we live, as compared to the area where we live.
Well, wherever the INS operates, that's where it happens.
There's a movie that David Johnson, I think, public television program.
Yeah.
Suggested that the Mexican
good movie. Term
discriminated against the other Latinx, given their inferior.
Our son-in-law, our son-in-law is Guatemalan, and he has a great amount of problems with Mexicans, and the Mexican people we work with have a great amount of problems with Guatemalans. And that goes back so far that, like, Guillermo cannot really explain to us. I've asked him, you know, why exactly do you dislike Mexicans so much? Well, it's a little nebulous. It's just one of, like, a family feud kind of thing.
It goes clear back to colonial times when there was a division between the conquistador de Mexico and the conquistador de Central America in Guatemala. And that's where the division started. There's a lot of that. The Guatemalans, I think, in general, kind of look upon the Mexicans as the hillbillies of Latin America. And also the Hondurans.
And we have people that are in our group right now, Salvadoran people, who tell for us.
The language also. There are how many languages spoken in Guatemala? Indian?
Well, at least 21.
Incredible, yeah.
That happened up here, too. There's a lot of the orchardists, the growers, we say, decided this year that they could no longer bring their children into the orchards. And so a lot of the women couldn't work, which cut the family income, you know, considerably, maybe almost in half in some cases. It is. Okay, well, sorry, our time is up. Thank you for your interest.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Okay.